Okay, good evening, everyone. I hope that you can hear me. You're all muted, and I guess I have no way of knowing, unless I look at somebody who shakes their head yes. Jay, can you hear? Okay, fantastic. So here we go. Welcome, everyone, to our pre-Pesach workshop in this most unusual and extraordinary year. I know that some of you, many of you who are here, who've joined us, may be making Pesach for the first time. Even those who've made Pesach before haven't done so under such unusual and extraordinary circumstances. So I am here tonight to try to comfort you, ease your pain, relieve your anxiety, and give you a sense of hope and future in how easy this is going to be, not nearly as difficult as you might imagine. I want to begin by acknowledging our sponsor, Lions & Sons Koshering Service, a no-stress, no-mess lechatchila way to have your kitchen koshered for Pesach in the South Florida area. You can call or text Rabbi Lions to schedule your koshering at 561-376-9972. 561-376-9972. Thank you so much to Lion and Sons Koshering. So we are in the middle of a major crisis. I don't need to tell all of you. Obviously, we're all gripped by it and by what's happening in the world. But one of the themes that I've been trying to communicate in the different venues that I've been speaking is that in every crisis is an opportunity. Just like the shul being closed enables us to turn our homes into shuls and batei medrash in miniature, this also creates an opportunity for people who are used to going away for Pesach, whether it be to a hotel or whether it be to family or to their parents. The fact that many will be making Pesach at home is a bona fide crisis, but it's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity to experience Pesach in its fullest sense, in our homes, in the whole Pesach story, in the Pesach saga. We have the word bias being used over and over again as a reminder that the source of strength the Jewish people draw from is the home. So to be in our own home can present a challenge, but it also is a opportunity. And the attitude we bring towards this crisis slash opportunity will have indelible impact and impression on our children or grandchildren who are watching. If the thought of our making Pesach in our own bias, in our own home, is debilitating and devastating and is a crisis on par with what some other people around us are suffering and we daven for them strongly, then it says everything about us. And if we're willing to roll with the punches, and if we're willing to be flexible, and if we're willing to figure it out, because halavai, this should be the worst thing that ever happens to us, is that we have to actually make a Jewish holiday within our home with excitement, enthusiasm, and passion, then we are in good shape. So it's critically important, the culture that we're creating, the atmosphere that we're breeding, and the attitude that we're messaging to the people around us and really to ourselves. So take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. And realize that this is doable, that you got this, that we're going to have a beautiful, beautiful Pesach, whether we're socially distanced from one another, whether we're, God forbid, quarantined or isolated, or whether by then we're able to come together, we're going to have a beautiful Pesach, because Pesach ultimately comes from the attitude that we bring. And if Pesach is not anything else, it's about freedom and liberating ourselves from the anxiousness, the anxiety of Egypt, from thinking that we are in control, thinking that we have the power. The whole experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus, was Hashem saying, worship me, don't worship others. Don't worship yourself. Realize ultimately I am in control. So this is an opportunity and an exercise, and I know that you didn't dial in to hear this homiletical sermon. You dialed in because you want the practical about Pesach, and we're going to get to that in a moment. But before we even do, join me in taking a deep breath. Join me in expressing and exercising our emunah, our realization and our mindfulness that Hashem has our back, that we can do this, that we have it covered, and that it's up to us to project a joyful and a happy attitude towards the opportunity to be able to make this Pesach. Purim's always joyful, but even this Pesach. I shared previously, and I want to share again, the insight Rav Melech Biderman in his Haggadah has, who wonders why the Russia asks when it comes to Pesach, Maha Avodah Azos Lachem. I would understand Yom Kippur if the Russia turned to us and said, you're fasting for 25 hours? I would understand if he said, Sukkos, in Boca, you're sitting outside, 100 degree heat, 100% humidity? I would understand if the Russia says, Maha Avodah Azos Lachem, but Pesach? By the time you sit down to the Seder, you're having four cups of wine. You're eating delicacies. You're having a wonderful time around the table. Why is the Russia complaining? Says Rav Melech Biderman, the Russia, when he asks, Ma avodah zos lachem, is not talking about once you're at the Seder. The Russia has just spent 3 weeks leading up to Pesach, hearing you kvetch and hearing you moan and hearing you groan and hearing you miserable at the thought of staying home and having to make Pesach. So the Russia says, Mavodos oslachem. When this virus is over, when I'm allowed to no longer distance myself, but I can come close to others, I'm out of here. What do I need a religion that my memories of my parents were so fabisina and miserable? And so it's so critically important. Among everything else we're going to do, the bedika chametz, we're going to search our homes for chametz. We have to search our hearts for negativity, for pessimism, for resentment. And instead, we have to fill our hearts with joy, with optimism, with hope, with emuna, embracing this opportunity, the opportunity to create memories for the people around us that will last a lifetime. They will remember how we handled this and the difference that we can make. And that's what this is, the last vort. That's what the parsha last week, Kisisa, tells us right before it warns us. Es chag ha-matzos tishmor shivas yom etoch ha-matzos. It says, Elohei ma'secha lo sa'aser lach. You shall not make for yourself images of gods. And here Rav Melech Biderman in his Agada again quotes from Rav Asher of Stalin. He says the following, Elohei ma'secha lo sa'aser, right before Chag HaMatzos tishmor, ki milsa d'shchicha lovo l'dekas b'tkufas Chag HaPesach. Because we know that anger, a person who gives in to their anger, is as if worshipped an idol. Don't worship idols around the holiday of Pesach. Don't get angry unnecessarily. Don't become frustrated. Don't lose your cool. Don't have a temper. Don't be bitter. Don't be resentful. But stay in the moment. Realize it's a crisis, but it's an opportunity. Don't just search for chametz. Search the chametz within our attitude. Don't just burn and destroy the chametz. Burn and destroy the negative midos in our lives. Our practice in the Goldberg home is Bedikas Chametz night. When the children hide the 10 pieces of chametz, each child, before they hide them, designates each piece of chametz for themselves as representing a behavior, a character trait, a thought process that they need to get rid of, that they need to purge. And then we go find them, and when we burn the chametz, and we'll have to see how it unfolds this year to fulfill Bir Chametz, when we burn the chametz, we're purging that character trait from within our midst. We have to get rid of the negativity. We have to embrace the joy. There are people all around us and all around the world who wish that their biggest problem through this episode was having to make their Pesach Halavai. That should be our biggest challenge. Together, we can do it. So what is Pesach all about? Here's what we're going to do tonight, and we'll go as long as it takes. I'm here if you have questions. I don't really know how to use Zoom so well, but I have my trusty assistant, the Rebbetzin, sitting next to me, and we're going to try to follow the chat. So if you have questions that you want to pose in the chat, we'll try to follow them and we'll try to deal with them. Some of you submitted the questions in advance, and we're going to tackle all of those as well. So before we begin talking about Pesach, cleaning the home, and here's my contention to you as it is every year. Outside the kitchen, and the kitchen is its own territory, the kitchen takes a lot of work, but outside of your kitchen, cleaning for Pesach should take a few hours, half a day maximum. And I'm going to show you how, and I'm going to show you why. There's a difference between cleaning for Pesach and spring cleaning. Spring cleaning is lovely, it's wonderful. And if you want to do it because you're home anyway, feel free. But don't blame Yiddishkeit, Torah, or the rabbis for the hard work that you have to put into making Pesach. First of all, also, we're recording this, so if anybody wants to be able to listen or share it later with others, you'll have the opportunity to do so. We need to define our concepts. The Rambam, in his introduction, writes that there are 8 mitzvahs that apply to Pesach today. I have all the sources. I'm not going to read them inside. Again, I know it's not why you have called. There are 3 positive commandments associated with observing Pesach and 5 negative. The 5 negative are, we're not allowed to eat chametz from chatzos, from midday on Erev Pesach. You can't eat all 7 days, for us 8 days, chametz. Number 3, you can't even eat a mixture. This is a stringency of chametz beyond other prohibited foods. Then not only are we instructed outright not to eat the food, you also can't even eat a mixture containing the food. And then the final 2 are what we know as Bal Yira and Bal Yimatzah. Lo Yira, Lo Yimatzah. You're not allowed to see, you're not allowed to find. Now what does that mean? Let's define that. It doesn't mean that you can't walk, should we be allowed to leave our homes, that you can't walk the aisles of a supermarket on Pesach. It doesn't mean you have to avoid the bread of the cereal aisle. That's not Bal Yira. You're not prohibited from seeing chametz that doesn't belong to you or finding chametz that doesn't belong to you. The prohibition of Bal Yira, Bal Yimatzah is chametz which is owned by us, we cannot see and we cannot find. What are the 3 positive commandments associated with Pesach? Number 1, Lahashbis Sa'or, the Rambam writes, we have to destroy, obliterate the Sa'or, the yeast, the leaven, the chametz in our midst. Number 2, we have a mitzvah to eat matzah. And number 3, to tell the story, Lasaper, of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Chametz is unique in 5 ways. Number 1, there's a specific negative prohibition against eating mixtures of chametz, we pointed out. Not only chametz outright, even mixtures. Number 2, we have 2 prohibitions against even possessing chametz. Bayira bayimatz. It's not enough that you don't consume it. It's not enough that you don't benefit from it. You can't even possess it. Number three, we have a positive commandment to get rid of it. When it comes to other prohibited foods, we don't have a positive commandment. Here we have to dispose of it, get rid of it. Number four, there's an isser hana'ah. There's a prohibition to benefit. So you're not allowed to feed a chametz mixture to your pet. And we'll get to protocols about how to deal with pets. You can't give chametz to a non-Jew on Pesach. There is halachic literature about, can you own stock in a company that manufactures and that owns chametz? And the majority opinion is that you can, unless you own so much stock that you're the majority shareholder and have majority control of the company. Halavai, more power to you. And number five, b'mashehu. Other prohibited foods, their minimum measure that prohibit you are a larger amount, a kazayis, a kabetz, and so on. When it comes to chametz, it's a mashehu. Even the most negligible, barely discernible amount of chametz is prohibited, is the enemy number one. And therefore, you see from these five exceptions, these five unique factors about chametz, why chametz is our arch enemy, our arch rival, and we are on a search and destroy mission. That in these weeks and days leading up to Pesach, our job, our mission, whether you were going to be home or whether you were going to be away, we have a responsibility to rid ourselves of that chametz. What is chametz? Let's define it. The Rambam says chametz is made from the five types of grain, and they are wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. Wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. All five grains are what constitute chametz. All five grains, conversely, are what constitute matzah. Whatever would be prohibited if you ate it or owned it or benefited from it on Pesach is also a candidate for you to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. Now you'll notice what was not on that list of those five grains? Legumes, what we call kitnios. Kitnios cannot become chametz. Legumes, grains, beans would fall under the prohibition of kitnios, was adopted later. There's a debate, not for now, why Ashkenazim, Sfardim did not adopt it. Ashkenazim did for one of two reasons. Either because the sacks that stored the kitnios, they often were able to make them bigger and weigh more by adding flour. Chametz was mixed in, therefore there was a fear if you consumed kitnios, you might consume chametz outright. Or the second suggestion is that kitnios are all food items that can be turned into flour and manipulated like you do chametz. And therefore, Ashkenazi Rishona medieval commentaries adopted a practice that Ashkenazim continue until today, despite the desire of some to get rid of it. Can you just turn the sound all the way off? Decide to get rid of it. Ashkenazim say, for those two reasons, we avoid kitnios. But be clear, kitnios at most is rabbinic, is likely a strong custom, which has the status of halacha, but is not a biblical prohibition. And there are very significant consequences to that. It means that something that's prohibited because it's kitnios, you're allowed to benefit from, you're allowed to own, and you're allowed to even use in extenuating circumstances like allergies, children, sensitivities, and so on and so forth, will come to exceptions of kitnios. What makes something into chametz? So flour of these five grains, wheat, and spelt barley, oats, or rye, flour from those five grains, which makes contact with water and sits for 18 minutes, constitutes chametz. So you'll say, why is flour chametz? Why can't you own flour? Those who won't own or sell outright chametz, why can't they keep flour? So the truth is that flour, in the process of grinding the wheat or one of those grains, comes in contact, they use water or they use steam in order to soften it, in order to ground it. So it's already chametz even when it's in your flour bag. Chametz is asur b'mashu, even in the smallest amount, even in the most negligible size. Now, how do we get rid of the chametz in our lives? So there's a biblical prohibition you can't own, you can't benefit from, you can't eat chametz on Pesach. Chametz represents, now is not the time, but chametz represents the evil urge, the Yetzihara. Chametz is leaven, it's inflated, it's ego, it's arrogance, it's attitude. Chametz represents all that's wrong that we're trying to purge. And again, I can't emphasize strongly enough that we should not be so caught up in the minutiae and being so neurotic about Pesach and chametz that we have absolutely purged it of any spirituality. Chametz is a spiritual experience. Pesach and the search for chametz is a spiritual experience. It's a internal search and inventory as much as it is one about our home. So we're trying to get rid of it. How do we do it? So we do it in two ways. We do bittel chametz. And again, I have sources I'm happy to share on all of this with everyone, but I know we want to get to the nitty gritty tonight. We do bittel chametz, which is that we tell chametz, we can't continue this relationship. We have to break up. I'm going to nullify our relationship. I resolve that all the chametz that I own is like dust. It's inconsequential. It's of no benefit to me. It is kehefker ukaafra da'ara. It is ownerless. It is insignificant, negligible, inconsequential. And therefore, by breaking up and by withdrawing from our relationship with chametz, by declaring it ownerless, I therefore am not liable for the prohibition of owning chametz. That's method number one, and that's the method that we employ, both on the night of Bedikas Chametz, the night before Erev Pesach, when we recite the Bittul, and the next morning when we burn the chametz, we recite the Bittul again. The second method is Bedikas Chametz, search and destroy, looking all over our home, cracks and crevices, finding it and getting rid of it. And you'll ask, well, why do I need to do both? If I broke up with chametz and we have no relationship, why do I also have to find it and get rid of it? And the answer, and if I find it and get rid of it, why do I still have to do bittul? Why do I still have to relinquish my ownership? Why do I still have to break up my relationship with it? And the answer, Chazal, our rabbis, the beginning of Psachim, codified in the Shulchan Aruch, and elaborated on by the Mishnah Berurah, the reason is very clear. Because bittul relies on a person's thoughts and feelings. One has to authentically and genuinely be willing to say, I'm relinquishing my entire scotch collection. But you know, a person could have a pretty impressive scotch, whiskey, rye, vodka, cognac, whatever collection. Cognac's probably wine. And therefore, are you really relinquishing that ownership? What if you have some very expensive, what if you come across that donut on Pesach? Did you really break up with that chametz? And therefore, as a backstop to ensure that we really don't violate these severe prohibitions, we search and destroy. If we're searching and destroy, then why do I have to also do bittul? And the answer there too is obvious. Because what if I didn't find chametz? So in the off chance that I didn't find chametz, I nevertheless can relinquish my ownership by saying bittul. And then we have a third method, mechiras chametz. Now, ordinarily, we come in, we meet the rabbi, we lift the handkerchief, we give a gift to Ma'oz Chitim. It's a beautiful way to connect before Pesach, and that has been stolen from us. One of the casualties of this horrific crisis that today we cannot convene for Mechiras Chametz, but through the Boker Haton Synagogue on our website, brsonline.org/chametz, you can sell your chametz online, and though it's not ideal, it is fully viable and functional, and selling chametz online constitutes the full sale of chametz. The lifting of an object is a symbolic transaction, which adds to the seriousness and significance of it, and even absent the physical symbolism, it is a full and binding transaction. So we sell our chametz, which is the third method. Combining all three, we can ensure that we do not violate this prohibition of chametz, of owning or interacting with or benefiting from chametz. Now there's one other halacha that has to do with Pesach that I want to share with you, and then we'll begin our journey through our home. Here's what we're going to do. I started to outline. We're going to go on a journey through our home to talk about what we're looking for, where we have to get rid of it, how far we have to go. Then we're going to go through the kitchen to talk about how you kasher all the appliances and segments and sections. If I were really talented, I'd be doing this from my kitchen and showing you appliances and so on. And then we're going to talk about products, medicines, cosmetics, food products, and different policies. I already got questions. Can we use Purell? The crisis, the Pesach question of 2020. What is the status of Purell this Pesach? So before we get into that nitty-gritty, one last halacha that I want to share with you, maybe the most important, and that is the following. The Shulchan Aruch says, the Shulchan Aruch records for us in Siman Tov Kuf Chav Tes, Chayav Adam Leo Sameach V'Tov Lev Bamoed Hu V'Ishta U'Banav. We have Shalosh Regalim, we have these three holidays. The word regel comes from hergel. It's breaking up the habit, it's breaking up the rote. We've fallen into routine. The Shalosh Regalim come and they break the hergel, they destroy the habit. And we're able to rejuvenate and refresh. And there is an obligation, a Torah obligation, that is as serious as the prohibition of chametz. There's a biblical mandate and responsibility. Chayev Adam Leo Sameach. V'tov lev b'moed. We have to be joyful and happy. You can't be a shmata and schlep to the Seder or to the Pesach experience. And the Mishnah Berurah goes out of its way. The Chafetz Chaim writes, V'mitzvah saseh min haTorah d'chsiv v'samachta b'chagecha v'noheges gam b'nashim. It is specifically important for women upon whom the greatest burden, maybe not this year when their husbands have to be home like them, but whoever the greatest burden falls upon should not forfeit that mitzvah of simcha. We all have that responsibility, and it's critically important. Here are the rules and the principles of what we're searching for, and you will realize why I argue that if you're not doing spring cleaning, you do not have to spend too much time in transforming your house for Pesach. If you are schlepping and moving a heavy appliance, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not cleaning for Pesach. If you're on a ladder, you're spring cleaning, you're not cleaning for Pesach. If you have a toothbrush and you're on your hands and knees and you're scrubbing grout, you are doing spring cleaning, you're not cleaning for Pesach. I can't say this more emphatically or more strongly. I don't get criticized more throughout the year than for saying this, but you'll excuse me, I am simply communicating the halacha. If people want to go above and beyond, they're entitled to, but they're not entitled to impose that on others and thereby ruin or compromise other people's simcha sachag, the simcha of Pesach. So what are the principles that govern? What are the principles that govern? The Shulchan Aruch tells us the following. Shulchan Aruch says the following. What is chametz and what am I looking for? Where do I find it? Tof Nun Gimel. Sorry, Tof Nun. Tof Lamed Dalet is the following. Shulchan Aruch says the following. No, Tof Lamed Gimel. Shulchan Aruch says the following. Any area or place where chametz is never brought does not need to be cleaned or checked for chametz. Any area of your home. I don't know whether you climbed into the crawl space when you were putting the luggage back and decided to remain there to have a sandwich. So if you ate a sandwich in the crawl space of your home, then you need to check it and you need to clean it. If you pulled the refrigerator out so you can sit behind it and enjoy a sandwich, then you need to pull the refrigerator out in order to clean it and in order to check it. If you lifted the oven so that you could sit beneath it and munch on a calzone or a pizza or a cracker, then you need to lift the oven. If you climbed a ladder so that you can be even with the ceiling fan while you had pretzels, then you need to climb on a ladder and check the ceiling fan. But assuming you did none of the above, and it's in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Tof Lamed Gimel, Siv Gimel, I'm not making it up. You could look at it inside for the sake of time. I'm not reading it to you, but okay, I'll read it to you. Bodei kol makom sheyesh lo hashem yechnisu b'hem chametz, v'lachein kol chadrei abayis v'aliyos tzrichem bedika, shepa'amim adam nechnis b'hem u'pito b'yado. Aval otros yayin she'in mistapik b'hem ve'im maskim mekiotze b'hem, ein tzrichem bedika. We eliminate off the bat any area that we're not going to, we had never brought chametz, and any area that we're not going to access on Pesach. I can't say this any more clearly. So, crawl spaces and attics and behind appliances and ceiling fans and ladders, one does not need to clean. That is not part of the laws of Pesach. It falls under spring cleaning. Do it at your own risk. Do it of your own volition. How do you define areas of the home where chametz may have gone? Here the Mishnah Berurah chimes in, and it's complicated because the Mishnah Berurah says, Bayis shatinokos mitzuyim bo, let's say you do not have young children at home. If you're an empty nester, or if you have children but they are generally obedient and compliant and disciplined, then you can identify the areas of your home where chametz didn't go behind a dresser. Again, unless you moved your dresser to enjoy a delicious glass of scotch behind it, you don't need to move a dresser. If you're moving appliances, if you're moving furniture, if you're climbing ladders, those are all places where chametz is not brought, and therefore you do not need to clean and you do not need to check. If there are other areas of your home, so you know you have a guest room, you know you have a certain space where chametz wasn't brought, it does not need to. And I'll go a step further. Any area that you're going to close off for Pesach does not need to be cleaned and does not need to be checked is included in your sale of chametz. And therefore, if there is a room, if there is a cabinet, if there's a storage area that you're not going to access, simply put a piece of tape across. It's my favorite, Yecheved will tell you, my favorite part, maybe the only part I participate in getting ready for Pesach, is taking the tape and going crazy around the house. All the kitchen cabinets, which we're not converting to use for Pesach, which is 80 to 90% of them, no one has to empty them, you don't have to wipe them down, you don't have to clean them, you don't have to check them. All you have to do is put a piece of tape across them. Not a permanent tape, a painter's tape. I don't want to ruin all of your magnificent cabinets on Motzei Pesach, don't sue me. So temporary tape When you tape up those cabinets, they are rendered ready for Pesach. Areas of your home, put a piece of tape. The same is true with appliances. If you're not going to, and you're not going to, we're going to get to, your toaster, your sandwich maker, your mixer, your appliances that it's almost impossible to clean and get ready for Pesach, don't try. If you're using a toothbrush and toothpicks, then you're in doing spring cleaning. You're not getting ready for Pesach. Take the appliances, put them in a box, seal the box. Take the appliances, put them in a closet, seal the closet. Take the appliances, put them in a cabinet, put a piece of tape across the cabinet. I've just saved you. We've saved ourselves an enormous amount of work. So the image of emptying every cabinet, wiping every plate down, emptying everything, going through the sandwich maker, standing with your toolbox and screwdrivers and taking apart the appliances, feel free to do it. It has nothing to do with our religion. What our religion requires of you is close it, piece of tape across it, ready to go. Now, of course, the shelves and the cabinets that you're going to use, the shelves and the cabinets that you're going to put your Pesach items and your Pesach utensils and your Pesach ingredients, of course they need to be emptied and they need to be wiped down, and the areas of your home that you're going to use. So if you plan on accessing the clothing, the wardrobe in your closet and in your dressers, you need to look through them. You need to ensure and confirm there's no chametz in them. But areas where chametz was never brought and areas where chametz was, which you're going to close off and not use, you are good to go. You're good to go. So we'll talk about the playroom and toys in a moment. Mishnah Berurah pointed out, if you have children, sometimes all bets are off. If you pull the bed away, you'll find that behind your child's bed can be an entire bakery. You have half of Publix. You could have half a supermarket behind there. So if you have young children, sometimes all bets can be off. It takes a little bit more of a comprehensive review to ensure there's no chametz. But what is the definition of chametz that we are looking for? How do you define chametz? So any food, the Shulchan Aruch writes, in Shulchan Aruch, Tof Mem Beis, Shulchan Aruch says the following. Hapas atzma she'ipsha v'nifsala milechol akelav v'milugma she'nisrecha, eino chayev leboer. Any food that's not categorized as edible, meaning a dog would not eat it. If your pet would not eat it, it is not called chametz. And if it's not called chametz, you're not obligated to get rid of it. And there is no need to check, therefore, for crumbs that are less than a kezias if they're dirty or soiled and wouldn't be edible by a human. So any food that is categorized as inedible to a dog is not chametz. Anything less than a kezias, dirty or soiled, inedible to a human, is not called chametz. So again, under your oven, behind your refrigerator, and in these nooks and crannies and these areas, if you can't reach them, spray some form of a cleaner that has something which will render the food that's there inedible if it's not already, and you are good to go. So practically speaking, any cabinet, closet, or room that will not be entered on Pesach can be closed with a piece of tape across the door, and any chametz that's inside of it listed in the sale. Any kitchen cabinet, drawer, cupboard that will not be used on Pesach does not need to be cleaned. Needs to be taped shut. Any appliance, food processor, sandwich maker, mixer, bread machine that will not be used, you do not need to break your back cleaning it. Put it away for Pesach in a sealed space and sell it. That is the halacha. What's the halacha? That you go room to room confirming there's no chametz larger than 30 grams and edible. Any chametz larger than 30 grams and edible. If it's smaller than chametz than 30 grams and inedible, it is not chametz. And I believe and contend that can be accomplished in literally a few hours, in half a day, maybe a day. Even within the rooms, assuming that we maintain our homes relatively normally, that you vacuum on a regular basis, and that you don't have, you know, rotten, spoiled crumbs growing in your dressers and in your the bottom of your closet, simply going through the closet, pulling out drawers, you don't have to empty them all, ensuring that there's no edible chametz more than 30 grams in each room within our home. So again, to summarize, if you're moving an appliance, if you're climbing a ladder, if you're on your hands and knees, if you're using a toothbrush and a toothpick, you're doing spring cleaning, you're not cleaning for Pesach, enjoy, you'll have the cleanest home in the community, but you will be a shmata and you will come to your Pesach Seder not feeling the simcha that is incumbent upon each and every one of us every year. Chayv Adam Lios Sameach V'Tov Lev B'Moed. I can't emphasize that strongly enough. So those are the parameters that determine the cleaning of our home. I'm looking in the chat. Any questions we have about cleaning outside the kitchen? Now we're going to go into the kitchen together. Everyone ready for our journey to the kitchen? We're going into the kitchen, but outside the home. The last thing is, this is the real-time chat, the note from my wife. Toys. Toys can be nasty. According to many poskim, Play-Doh is actual flour, potentially edible, could be chametz. Put the Play-Doh away. Here's the best thing to do. If there are complicated, intricate toys in your playroom, in your area where the children play, throw them in a box, seal them up, don't even bother. Simplify, consolidate. The children will discover that even a shoebox becomes the greatest toy again. Sometimes there are too many options and too many choices. Part of the freedom of Pesach is to consolidate those choices, limit the toys. The ones that are complicated, difficult to clean, put them in a box, seal it, put it away, and you are good to go. So again, the rest of the home, don't climb ladders, don't move appliances, and don't go crazy. Simply look for edible chametz more than 30 grams in the places where chametz is taken during the year and the places you're going to access on Pesach itself. Together, we move over now to the kitchen. Let's go to the kitchen. So I want to point you to several resources, by the way. In addition to what we're sharing, much of it comes from these resources, but questions you'll have afterwards, I'm more than happy to answer, but you can go to them. I am a big believer and I'm deeply grateful for the wonderful work of my dear friend Rabbi Fishbane at the CRC. CRC out of Chicago does an incredible job. If you don't have it, download the CRC app, iPhone, Android. It is indispensable throughout the entire year. It has incredible lists. You can search it easily. It is incredible. Tells you which hachsherim are good. It will help you through your journey in Trader Joe's when you'll be allowed to go again, Bimheira V'Yameinu. So the CRC app is fantastic. Download it. They have a great Pesach. It's a couple hundred pages long. They have supplements based on the questions that come in. Whatever you're thinking or asking, likely the CRC has already faced it. So the CRC is a fantastic. So the OU also. The OU has an app. And the OU has a website, and the OU has a Pesach guide. Star K also has a comprehensive guide. Those three are fantastic for me personally. The first place I look is the CRC. I find it moderate, reasonable, and I find it comprehensive and incredibly helpful. And so I'm happy, and your rabbis, wherever you are that you're watching this, are happy and eager to answer your questions. But have pity on all of us. Check the app or the website first. That's where we're going to be looking in all likelihood. If you can't find it there or you have a complicated question, even if it is there, let us know. Don't even hesitate. We're here to help you. But feel free to look in those resources. They are fantastic. We're now in the kitchen together. Welcome. It's good to be together. How do you kasher your kitchen? So the kitchen, of course, we said, any cabinet, any pantry, any closet that you're not going to access on Pesach, you know how you get it ready for Pesach? Tape. Piece of tape over it. And it's done, ready. Any appliance you're not going to kasher and use, put away. Any cabinet, piece of tape. So the only part of the kitchen that we need to convert for Pesach are the parts of the kitchen that we're going to use, are the parts of the kitchen that we're going to access. Let's start with the countertops. Countertops can be kashered. The method of kashering them is pouring boiling water. Let's give a moment of background to how you kasher. We know, the Gemara records, that Tam Kikr, not only are foods themselves, the foodstuff itself, the actual item proper, something that we have to contend with, is it kosher, can't mix meat and dairy, but even the taste of that food, even after the food is no longer extant, it's no longer present, the taste itself is meaningful. Tam Kikr, the Gemara goes through several efforts to figure out where we learn that from ultimately, but it concludes that taste itself, which is why if you have a perfectly clean pot, perfectly clean, but it previously cooked non-kosher, or it previously cooked meat, and now you want to cook dairy, you can't. Why? Because the taste absorbed within the walls of that pot, even though you can't see food there, it is beautifully clean, sparkling clean, but the taste previously absorbed, tam ki ikar, is meaningful. So the process of kashering is trying to get the taste out of the utensil. How do you do it? Now, I'll let you on a little secret. Biblically speaking, taste is only viable for 24 hours. After 24 hours, it's called nosein tam lefgam. The taste itself becomes spoiled. The taste itself is not actual food, is not actually meaningful. After 24 hours, it's meaningless. Which means to say that biblically speaking, if you leave a utensil that's clean for 24 hours, it's kosher. If you leave a meat utensil for 24 hours that's clean, it became parav. We have a rabbinic prohibition Einu ben yomo, atu ben yomo, it will become incredibly, impossibly complicated in order to maintain the timeline of every utensil in your kitchen, every pot, every fork, every knife. When did the clock start? When does it end? And we're playing with fire, because if we use it in under 24 hours for something, it could be non-kosher, and therefore we have separate meat, separate dairy, separate kosher, separate non-kosher, and so on and so forth. So one principle that's very important to know is tam ki iker, taste is meaningful, gets absorbed into a pot. It lasts for 24 hours, after which it is negligible. It's a spoiled taste. It's no same tam levgam. It's contributing negatively. And from a biblical perspective, it's kosher already. And yet, we have to get it out of our utensil. How do you get it out? So Chazal tells, the Gemara tells us, kibolo kach polto. The way it's absorbed is the way that it becomes purged. If the taste was transferred into the utensil through liquid, then you need liquid to take it out. If it was transferred in through heat, you need heat to get it out. If it was transferred in through steam, you need steam to take it out. And we're going to now apply this to all of our utensils within the kitchen. So for example, an oven. The taste of the walls of the oven, because they're spoiled, there's spillage from whatever you were cooking in the oven, which might have had chametz ingredients, and the pan or the pot can touch the walls of the oven, it touches the rack. So the oven became absorbed chametz taste and through heat. So how do we get it out? Through heat. So how do you do that? So I mentioned that after 24 hours, taste is negligible. No sintam lefgam. So the first rule of kashering is we wait 24 hours, because after 24 hours, it's only a rabbinic taste that we're trying to remove. Biblically, it has already been restored to its factory setting of being kosher, being parav, of being non-chametz. We wait 24 hours, and that helps us because we've now lowered it to a rabbinic level. So if you have a oven. Self-clean oven. If you have a non-self-clean oven, clean it well. And when I say clean it well, another rule of kashering is if there's any foodstuff extant, if there's actual food there, then it's not just tam that we're getting rid of the taste. We have to actually contend with the food. So you have to clean. Anytime you're going to kasher, you have to clean exceedingly well. Leave 24 hours and then kasher. There's one exception we'll get to in a moment. So if you have an oven, clean it really, really well. Clean the accordion around the door. Clean really, really well. Clean the oven well. This is a non-self-clean oven. Once it's cleaned, your clock has started. Wait 24 hours. Put it on the highest setting, preferably 550 or higher, for an hour. On the highest setting for an hour, a non-self-clean oven, after having waited 24 hours, is now ready to go for Pesach. If you have a self-clean oven, you don't have to wait the 24 hours. Why? Because self-clean reaches such a high temperature, it reaches the level not of libun kal, not the lower level of heat that gets rid of the absorption through heat. Libun chamor is the ultimate purging, because it actually obliterates anything in its path. And if you don't believe me, put a wooden spoon in your self-clean oven and run the self-clean cycle. And when you open that oven door, don't actually do this. When you open that oven door, you will find a pile of ash. You no longer will be the proud owner of a wooden spoon. It obliterates whatever is inside. It is the highest level. It's called Libun Chamor. And therefore, it's the one exception where you don't need to wait the 24 hours and you can run the self-clean. Every year I'm asked, usually by my wife and even by others, what happens if the self-clean didn't make it to the end of the cycle? What happens if it stopped early? So if the self-clean was on for more than an hour, then you are good to go. If it made it and reached that level of temperature of Libun Chamor, even if it didn't stay there for as long as ideally it should, you are good to go. If you're concerned that your self-clean cycle won't make it as long as it needs to, then wait the 24 hours before you run the self-clean. Clean it, wait 24 hours, run the self-clean, and then if it self-cleans, you're good to go, even if it doesn't make it till the end of the cycle. Chad, my dear childhood friend, who I'm so excited to see is on, asks in the chat, so non-self-clean ovens don't need a blowtorch? That is correct. A non-self-clean oven does not need a blowtorch. First of all, if you don't know how to use a blowtorch, you don't want to go near a blowtorch. So it doesn't need it. If you clean it well, wait 24 hours, leave it on the highest setting for an hour, your non-self-clean oven is good to go. That is ovens. I'll keep an eye on the chat, but assuming no one has any other questions with ovens, we've covered ovens. Let's go above. What is the minimum time when What's the minimum time once reaching the temperature? It should be on for as long as possible. It has to hit that temperature and maintain it, ideally for, again, an hour, like a non-self-clean, but even if it didn't make it. If it barely started the self-clean cycle, then you haven't achieved libun chamur. It has to make it in the cycle, just not make it all the way to the end. Let's go now underneath the... We don't want to use the self-clean. Can we just clean the oven, wait 24 hours, and do 500 for an hour? Yes, if the self-clean is going to produce fumes and you're quarantined at home and don't want everyone breathing it, then you can use that alternate. Self-clean is not necessarily better. Libun Chamor is more ideal in theory, but if you wait the 24 hours and then leave it on self-clean, leave it on the highest setting for an hour, you've achieved that level. When you're running the self-clean, you do not have to clean it well beforehand. The self-clean, because it achieves libun chamor, is such a intense heat, it does not need to be cleaned incredibly well. Yes, we're going to be recording this, and you can find it later for those who are asking it. Let's go below the oven and go to the warming drawer. Let's go down to the warming drawer. Can you kasher a warming drawer? Some of the hechsherim do not suggest kashering the warming drawer. Here's one of the reasons I love the CRC. The CRC have no problem with kashering a warming drawer. And the way they say to kasher the warming drawer is to put a sterno in, put it on the highest setting, and leave it for an hour, but with the drawer, a little bit ajar. Why would the drawer a little bit ajar? Otherwise, the heat buildup will be so intense, you could break the warming drawer. They have this in their, not in the main document, but in the Pesach facts. The simplest way to heat the warming drawer to the required temperature, they write, is to light one can of the type of canned fuel used to heat chafing dishes, sterno, in the warming drawer. Make sure to leave the door of the warming drawer slightly ajar so there'll be enough air to allow for combustion. One standard 2 to 3 hour ethanol or methanol can should be adequate to heat an average size warming drawer to libun kal for about 2 hours. So they do not talk about leaving the warming drawer on, just put the sterno in it 2 to 3 hours. One can, 2 to 3 hours, will allow it. As with all kashering, first you have to clean the warming drawer well and leave it for 24 hours before you kasher it using this method. Warming drawers are a wonderful way to heat food on Shabbos and Yontif. It's a big machlokas aposkim, but assuming you use a warming drawer, which we do, it's wonderful, and therefore it is a good way. Back to the chat, some of the questions that are coming in. If you don't want to ruin the racks, can you leave them for 24 hours and then use them covered with foil? No, covering them foil is not enough, because of the transfer that comes through. Some are strict to transfer it with foil even after kashering, but if you don't want to put the racks through the self-clean cycle, then leave them in the oven with the oven on high for an hour, and that is enough to kasher the racks themselves. We're not up to that yet. Toys, for example, magnet tiles, are we required to wash each piece in order to use it for Pesach? Again, one has to use some common sense. If you are giving a review of the toys and you don't see actual chametz, which is edible and more than 30 grams, stuck to it, then you do not need to drive yourself crazy to rinse it and to wash it and to soak it and to bathe with it. All you need to do is make sure that there's no edible chametz more than 30 grams, which is there, which I think most toys don't. In a toy, you'll sometimes find that there's a cookie, there's a cracker, they were eating part of a sandwich. So you have to go through it and you have to clean it, but you don't have to go crazy. So for the warming drawer, again, for the CRC, don't leave the oven on, just put the sterno in, one that lasts 2 to 3 hours, leave the drawer ajar a bit, and you've kashered your warming drawer. So we covered the ovens and we covered the warming drawer. And now we're up to the microwave oven, because that has the word oven in the name, so we'll go for it next. Microwave oven. So the microwave oven. A microwave, how does a microwave get taste transferred into it? A microwave has a glass plate. Ashkenazim hold we cannot kasher glass for Pesach. There is a big debate. We have different approaches to when it comes to glass. In the world of Tumah, in the world of Kashrus, and in other areas of Halacha. Sometimes we treat glass like metal, which is kasherable. Sometimes we treat glass like ceramic, earthenware, which is not. So therefore, it's a big debate among our Rishonim and among the Poskim what we observe. So Ashkenazim follow the opinion of the Ramah that when it comes to Pesach, we are strict not to kasher glass. We assume that glass can absorb taste, but it cannot be purged of its taste. And therefore, we do not kasher glass. Sfardim disagree. Sfardim follow the Mechaber, who follow the opinion that glass neither absorbs nor it purges. It's porous. It doesn't absorb or purge, and therefore Sfardim will allow Pyrex or Pyrex, other forms of glass utensils, to be able to be used without kashering them at all. The ones that are used all year long are permissible for Sfardim as well on Pesach. So we'll talk about this more in a moment when we get to the utensils, but I bring it up now because the glass tray that's in the microwave for Ashkenazim needs to be removed. Put it in that box with your sandwich maker and your bread maker, seal it up with a piece of tape, and your microwave is now glass-free. So how do you kasher it? How did the taste get absorbed into the walls of the microwave? It did it through a little thing called steam. When the microwave heated the food that was in it, it produced steam. The steam carries the same attribute or trait, has the same status of whatever produced the steam. So when the steam hits the walls of the microwave, it now, the walls of the microwave become infused, become absorbed with the taste of whatever absorbed, whatever produced the steam. So if steam is what transferred taste to the microwave, then steam is going to be our friend to get the taste out of the microwave. How do you produce steam in your microwave? You use a styrofoam bowl or cup, a microwave-safe utensil. Clean the microwave, especially clean around the fan, the filter, the ceiling, for all the things that exploded that your children put in for too long. Clean it really, really, really well. Leave for 24 hours. Put a microwave-safe utensil filled with water. Leave the microwave on long enough for that water to produce steam. Fill the inner chamber of the microwave with steam. You have to know what that period is for your microwave. Some is 12 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Be very careful when you open your microwave. There are stories of people who boiled water in the microwave with steam where it can pop out in a dangerous way. Please take a lot of caution when you open your microwave afterwards. Then you need to do is fill that microwave safe utensil a second time, move it, because you need to kasher the location where that bowl or cup was. It does not have to be a Pesach container. Preferably, it should be a disposable styrofoam, something microwave safe inside of it. Again, your microwave has been cleaned, has left for 24 hours. Take out the glass and then boil water and do it a second time for the spot, the space where the cup was. Pyrex was not considered glass, says iPhone. Parents had such prophecy when they named you iPhone. How did they know? So Pyrex was not considered glass. It depends. Pyrex, there's a Pyrex which is mixed with other ingredients. If it is, it's a problem. Pure Pyrex, according to Sfardim. Ashkenazim, it doesn't make a difference. Either way, we can't kosher it. For Sfardim, a pure Pyrex, we could. We covered the ovens. We covered the warming drawer. If I haven't said it yet, don't worry. We're going to get to more things. Only ask me if I don't get to it. So we covered the warming drawer, we covered the ovens, and we covered the microwave. Let's talk about the stovetop. Yeah, we're talking about the stovetop. There are different types of stovetop. You know what, actually, look in here for a moment. I forgot to look up the induction stovetop for a moment. We'll get to the counters. The stovetop. So in a classic stovetop, which is a gas range that has metal grates on top of it, you have to kasher it the following way. You take off the grates, take apart the pieces, clean everything exceedingly well. The area between the grates needs to be covered with tinfoil because there could be spillage there. You could have put a utensil there, and we don't kasher that area. The area between the grates gets covered. The grates themselves, if you want, you could put in your oven when you run yourself clean. Sometimes if you have grates that are running, not four separate ones, but sometimes you have long ones that run, they can be put into the oven and run the self-clean on them. Alternatively, you can leave each of the burners on high for 20 to 30 minutes each burner. Don't do it all at the same time. It'll produce an enormous amount of heat in your kitchen. But you kasher the grates, Rav Moshe writes, in the same way that they, again, could have absorbed. So with the fire underneath them, the heat source underneath them, that is the method that you kasher. So a gas stove with grates, cover the clean well, leave 24 hours, cover the area in between with tinfoil, cover the knobs or remove the knobs, and you can kasher them by putting them in boiling water if it won't destroy them, or you can cover them. And the grates themselves are left on the fire for 20 to 30 minutes as a way of kashering them. What about if it's a electric stovetop? Here in South Florida, we have a lot of electric stovetops. There are two types of electric stovetops. There are the electric element, and then there's a glass top stove. The electric element is kashered similar to the grate. Clean everything well, leave 24 hours, cover all the area, and then you leave each burner of the electric visible spiral until it glows red. Leave it on long enough until it glows red, and that is the method through which you have kashered it. Okay, so we covered the stovetop with the grates. We covered the electric stovetop. What about the glass top stove? When glass top stoves first came out, they hit South Florida before anyone else, and there was enormous debate. Now, you have to understand that one of the rules of koshering is, if you're koshering in a way that you're going to be afraid you're going to break it, then we don't believe you're going to do a comprehensive full koshering, and that koshering is therefore invalid, inadequate. So how do you kosher in a way that you can trust it? So all agree that the areas, the burners themselves of a glass top stove are koshered by leaving them on the highest setting until they glow red. That's the area. The big concern is the area in between the burners, because the area in between the burners is glass, and we just said that Ashkenazim hold you can't kosher glass. So some say you got to cover that. The problem with covering that is your manufacturer will tell you, and empirically I will tell you from the reports that people have given me over the years, that if you cover a glass top stove, even the areas between the burners, it will crack. You will break it. I bear no liability or responsibility. You do, and you will regret it. So if you cover the area, you very likely will break it. So what should you do? So some suggest you put trivets down in between to ensure that you won't put anything down on the area in between the burners because it's glass, and we said you can't kosher glass. However, in consultation with Rabbi Sabalovsky and with other poskim, and a more complicated background to the question of glass, here's what I suggest and what we've been doing for years here in Florida. What I say to everybody is to clean the stovetop very well and boil and turn each of the burners on high, not at the same time, till they glow red to kosher them. Then take a pot, it can be a Pesach pot, and heat water on it. Wait for the and pour it across the surface of the stove. I'm sorry, not in that order, because if the burner's still red, it'll be a problem. The opposite. You want to boil water from another source. If you have an electric kettle, you want to boil water from another source, pour it across the glass top stove, and that will, even though generally we say glass doesn't kosher, it's an extra layer of backup for the area between the burners. When it cools, then leave the burners on high. So again, to summarize the glass top stove. Pour boiling water from a separate kettle or urn that was plugged in across the surface of the glass. When it cools, leave the burners each on high until they glow red, so they're koshered. The most important part to try to remember is not to put anything down on the area of glass between the burners. I was asked about the drip pans beneath the grate should be covered. Cleaned well and covered. Everything under the grate should be covered if possible. Be careful to allow for the air circulation. Okay, the only one we did not cover is the induction stovetop. And I forgot to look it up beforehand, so we're going to come back to the induction stovetop in a minute. If you can check on that while I am. Induction. Hold on half a second. Hold on half a second. Now you can go get a drink or your bathroom break. Just 1 second. Okay, let's keep going. We're going to look it up while we go, and I'm going to come back and report it to you, the induction stovetop. I know many of you are waiting on the edge of your chair for the answer on that. That's the stovetop. Let's talk about counters. Again, kibolo kach polto. How does something get absorbed into your counter? Because you put a hot pot down where there was a liquid medium that transferred the taste into it. So the way to get it out is by pouring a liquid. Iroi kli rishon. So the way you kasher a counter is by heating water until what Chazal call, using an onomatopoeia, is mala ababuos. Ababuos comes from, sounds like bubbling. You can't kasher with water which is lukewarm. You can't even kasher with water which is hot or boiling. It has to be mala ababuos. It has to be bubbling. Ababuos. It has to be bubbling over. You take your kettle or you take your pot, wear gloves. Be careful not to wear open-toed shoes, be covered, stand at a distance, and you need to pour water along your counter. So again, you're going to clean your counter, and you're going to let it sit for 24 hours before you kosher it. You're going to boil water. Iroi kli rishon is not achieved when you pour the water and it runs along the length of the counter. You need to walk with the pot, and to the best of your ability, pour from the pot directly on the surfaces of the counter to the best of your ability. So if your counter is made from a material that is kasherable, that is the way it's kashered, by pouring boiling water on it. Water which is mala ababuos, water which is really brought to a true boil. You can't just splash it, you have to walk with it, and you have to pour it. Which of the utensils are the ones that can... Which of the materials are the ones? So the CRC has a wonderful list, a really comprehensive spreadsheet of which countertops can be kashered and which cannot. And I strongly encourage you, this is countertops, if you want to look on the CRC, every kind of countertop that you can imagine. We paskin for mica, if it's not made up of a lot of scratches and cracks, can be kashered. Granite can be kashered. Other items, porcelain countertops, cannot be kashered. Limestone can, laminate can, marble can, moonstone can. These are even countertops I've never heard of. Wood can, if there's no cracks. Zinc can, zodiac can. These were things I heard of in a lab. I never heard of them in a kitchen. Gibraltar can, glass tile cannot. So if you look there, if I didn't cover what you said, ceramic tile cannot, concrete cannot, earthenware generally cannot, and these other materials can. Again, they have a wonderful. Some have the custom, even after they kosher and pour water, of covering. Some just cover. My wonderful wife, we put in a new kitchen several years ago. She won't let me get near those cabinets with boiling water all over. And she says she'd rather cover it and know that it's kosher for Pesach without destroying the cabinets by pouring. If to do it properly, there's a lot of water, it's really hot, it makes a mess, and you have to be careful. So that's countertops. The materials that are eligible, you can kosher by pouring water. The materials that are ineligible, you have to cover. Can you use a steamer? People have asked. And the question is the following. Rav Moshe says you can't kosher with steam. You can only kosher something that needs a liquid with a liquid. So for a steamer to enable you to kosher, it would have to be that when the steam hits the surface, it condenses into water, and yet it's water at the level that needs to be for it to kosher. Most steamers, the kind you get at Bed Bath & Beyond, the kind that help you when you travel, make sure your clothing's not wrinkled, they do not meet those definitions, those criteria. When the steam turns into liquid, it is not at the heat that we need it to be. Every year I say, somebody needs to produce a Pesach koshering steamer that has a hechsher on it that everyone knows achieves the goal you need. It'll be a lot neater, a lot less of a mess, and a lot less dangerous. To the best of my knowledge, that has not yet happened. If you have access to a commercial steamer, like your dry cleaner is willing to lend it to you, then potentially it can work. But most of the other steamers, the private steamers for regular use, would not qualify or meet that need. Sinks. What about sinks? Sinks are kosher the same way as the counter. The way that taste got absorbed within the sink was through a hot liquid medium. And therefore, the way that you purge it, kibolo kach polto, is a hot liquid medium. You have to pour water till it's mala ababuos, it's truly bubbling over. Clean your sink, leave it 24 hours, and then pour the boiling water, not one big splash, pouring it around the surface of the sink. You have to be careful. If you have a drain, a net, you should take it out, or you should be koshering it or replacing it for Pesach, because little things can get caught there. The filter, if you have you need to kosher the faucet, pouring boiling water over the whole faucet. The rubber gasket is hard to kosher, even though we paskin, it's a debate that hard plastic can be koshered, but there's cracks and crevices and parts. All the koshering agencies suggest that you should not pull the sink, the faucet insert out over Pesach. You can pour it out, pull it out, pour boiling water over it. It helps you, but don't pull it out and use it over Pesach. You wouldn't want a crumb to fall out on Pesach in your sink while you are busy doing the cooking on Pesach. So which sinks, what's eligible? So metal is all eligible. Again, CRC has a wonderful list. The Star K, the OU all have lists. Ceramic sinks are no good. Porcelain sinks are no good. You need to get a sink insert and put an insert on the bottom of your sink. You put a hole in the bottom of the insert. You put it inside your sink. And that is what you'll use if you have a sink that cannot be koshered for Pesach. Okay? What pot do you use to kosher for Pesach? You can use either a chametz pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours or a Pesach tik pot. You could use either. If your stovetop was koshered, use a Pesach pot. If you haven't yet koshered your stovetop, you can use a chametz pot to kosher those other things first. You need to be smart. You need to be wise. Chacham einav berosho. You need a calendar. Look when Pesach falls, look when you want to start cooking, and look when you can shut down your kitchen. The best time to kosher is generally on a Saturday night, a Motzei Shabbos. It makes for a wonderful Motzei Shabbos activity. Doesn't work this way? Because Shabbos anyway, you're not going to be using your things for 24 hours. So your sink and your stovetop and your oven and your microwave and your warming drawer and your counters are going to be clean and not used for the 24 hours. which is what makes Motzei Shabbos generally a very good time to schedule kashering. This just in about the induction cooktops. Pouring boiling water on the rest of the cooktop. The pots on the top, covering the cooktop with a thick cover while making holes for the induction area. It's complicated. I'll come back to you with induction cooktops. It is complicated. Okay? So that is the sink. That's the faucet of the sink. That is the countertops. We did the microwave, the oven, the warming drawer. We have a way to go. Everybody take a deep breath. We got a way to go. We're not done yet. Not used for 24 hours means cleaned. The clock starts after it was cleaned. And even if after it was cleaned, so let's say you cleaned your counter and you started the clock on 24 hours and then somebody put down a cup of water, something cold, then that does not reset the clock. If somebody put down something hot, it would restart the clock. So if your counter is clean and the clock began, if someone puts down something cold, get it off, put them in timeout, wipe it down, and you're good to go. If somebody put down something hot, then your clock has to start from the stop. It's a good idea to tape up or put signs so people know that your 24-hour clock is in process and that they don't come along and mess it up. What else do we have to talk about? Hot water urn. Does a hot water urn need to be kashered? So Rav Schwartz should have Refuah Shleima, the CRC. His position is, if the hot water urn is not brought to the table and you do not use it to fill oatmeal or chametz and it's not washed with chametz, then it is kosher. You can use the same hot water urn for Pesach. If it is, however, does not, if you use it for those other things, then you need another hot water urn because the steam will rise from the chametz or from wherever and can create a problem. Others said you can kasher the hot water urn, running hot water through the water tap for 10 seconds while pouring boiling water from a kettle over the warming tap. So that's when the urn was only used for heating water. If it was used for warming food, it's a complicated thing. Put it away altogether. An electric mixer, complicated to kasher, cracks and crevices, put it away altogether. A hot plate. A hot plate can be kashered. Kibolo kach polto. Clean the hot plate well, la plata. Put two layers of tinfoil on top of it. Plug it in for 24 hours. Then put the two layers of... Clean the hot plate well. Leave it 24 hours. Plug it in for an hour. And then cover it with two layers of tinfoil before you use it on Pesach itself. That's hot plate. Urn. What about a Keurig coffee maker? A Keurig coffee maker. So you can kosher a Keurig coffee maker. Cleaning it well. Don't use 24 hours. Remove the cake cup holder and put it in a pot of boiling water, hagala mala ababuos, boiling water. Then run a kosher for Pesach K-cup through the machine and it will kosher the machine. Your Keurig then can be used for Pesach. I don't know. Microwave, sink, faucet, dishwashers. Dishwashers are eligible to be koshered according to many. However, we strongly discourage it. The dishwasher has filters, cracks, crevices, places that chametz hide, and then it comes when the water gets recycled. It has tubes and accordions, and therefore all kosher agencies strongly recommend not koshering the dishwasher for Pesach. What about the refrigerator? Refrigerator needs to be cleaned well and wiped down well, and it should be lined ideally. However, you need to be careful that that air can still circulate through the refrigerator. So one needs to know that the lining of the refrigerator is mostly symbolic. You do not need to cover, you don't have to do arts and craft, taping paper towel together to cover every millimeter of every shelf of every in your refrigerator. It is symbolically covering it, and therefore make sure whatever you're covering it with, if you have racks, that the air can flow between them. If they're shelves, you can cover them. It doesn't have to be every inch. But with the refrigerator, in addition to the shelves, wiping them down, being careful, the accordion around the door that makes it airtight, you need to be careful. If you're concerned you can't get in all of it and there might be crumbs and they might be edible, spray it with a caustic spray that makes it inedible and therefore you have turned it into something which is not chametz. What about your tablecloths and dish towels? Are those eligible for Pesach? Yes, God gave us a gift. It's called a washing machine. If you run your tablecloths and your dish towels through the washing machine, they're now kosher for Pesach. A glove to take something that's hot. What's that called?
An oven mitt.
Oven mitt generally has things caked onto it. It's not a good idea, even if you run it through the washing machine, have kosher le Pesach oven mitts, I saw. But when it comes to towels, when it comes to Tablecloths, not vinyl. Vinyl can't be kosher. You need a separate vinyl one for Pesach. But tablecloths, cloth tablecloths and towels can be run through the washing machine and they are kosher for Pesach. If you have a high chair, you have a child or grandchild around, it should be covered very well, covered at all areas, covered in all the spaces where chametz might have been found. The seats, the legs, and the bar should be wiped down with a soapy rag. Again, wiped down with something that would render whatever is might be there something ineligible. Okay, let's check our chat. Let's check our questions. A ninja coffee maker. I never heard of that before, but it sounds pretty cool. So I don't know. An espresso coffee machine. I believe the coffee machines would all follow the rule for Keurig, which is if you take out the part which holds the pod and you immerse it in boiling water to kosher it, and then you run a kosher for Pesach 1 through the machine, it has the form of koshering it. Grates at the bottom of the sink, can they be koshered? You can pour boiling water over them. The rubber gasket, the rubber might be a problem, better to remove it. Preferable to have different ones for Pesach, but you can pour boiling water over the grates on the base of a sink that can be koshered as well. What about a grill? A grill, in theory, can be koshered. It would require a blowtorch because the grill itself reaches libun chamur. The only way to purge it of a taste is through a process of libun chamur. To kosher the grill, you would need a blowtorch. It's not something I suggest trying at home. It would need to be cleaned extremely well and blowtorched. If you have that capacity, God bless you, you can kosher in theory the grill. If you don't, you could buy a George Foreman or a grill pan or a disposable grill to get through those days of Chol HaMoed. The glass cooktop, if the pot is larger or wider than the burner underneath, is that a problem? I was asked, and the answer is no. According to some, you should put a ring in order to prevent that, and according to me and your manufacturer, that is the surest way to break your glass top. Don't do that. The reason we suggested the pouring the water across the glass is, in that case, it helps us with the glass if your pot is bigger than the circumference of the actual heating element, so it's not a problem. If you follow the method we said, then it would be okay, even if it isn't. Ice machine in your freezer is fine. You should defrost your freezer preferably. Allow any frost, because sometimes the bread gets stuck through the frost on the side of your freezer. Those challah rolls that you've been hoarding and saving for a rainy challah shudas day that you need a backup, they get caked to the side. You have to be careful, so best to defrost the freezer and allow it to defrost totally so you can wipe it down. Similarly with the ice machine, defrost it, get rid of the ice, let it run a new cycle, and your ice machine is ready to go. Kasher the grill, grates kashered. Where are we posting this afterwards? It'll be on YU Torah and RabbiEphraimGoldberg.org. Either one of those venues we welcome and invite you to attend. Kasher in the kitchen. Is there anything that we left out from the kashering in the kitchen? Feel free to bring it up now in the chat. I know I owe everyone an answer on the induction question. But let's move on to other ingredients and other questions. Let me take a look at the questions that were submitted in advance. Electric stovetop, kelim mikveh. I was asked about the kelim mikveh given this year. Our kelim mikveh at Boker Ton Synagogue is currently open. According to the CDC, the kelim mikveh is available and accessible. There's a code to get in. It's the worst kept secret in Boca. I'll whisper it so that you know how to get in. It's 423. Is the kelim mikveh in Boca? Don't tell anybody who might steal the kelim mikveh. Obviously, we're observing social distancing, so people should not congregate in the kelim mikveh. If you see someone's in there, wait in your car, stand outside, give them space to operate. Don't forget to make a nice, generous donation to the kelim mikveh if you benefited from it. When it comes to coronavirus, my understanding from an infectious disease specialist is that we are... it's not confirmed that this is transferable through water, and therefore there's not a big fear yet. We're taking extra precautions. So we are treating the water of the kelim mikveh and the women's mikveh especially carefully. But when you've immersed your utensils in the kelim mikveh, afterwards you're going to want to rinse them with a detergent which is very strong, and you're going to want to wash your hands very carefully. Sing happy birthday a couple times while you do it, and make sure to wash well. But the kelim mikveh at BRS is available at this time. Again, please observe social distancing when you come there. Glass top we covered, electric stove top we covered, dishwasher, warming drawer, Instahot, Your InstaHot you can use. You kosher the faucet by pouring boiling water on it, and your InstaHot is usable. What about if you have a water dispenser like Zephyr Hills? So the cold for sure is permissible. The hot, it depends how you used it, similar to your urn. If you filled it with hot water for oatmeal or chametz, then it's a problem. If you didn't, then you can use it even for Pesach. As a general rule, if you want to be able to use it for Pesach throughout the year, don't fill your oatmeal directly from your dispenser. Fill a utensil and pour that into your oatmeal instead so that you can preserve it to be able to use it on Pesach. Okay, what other questions? Tablecloths, hand towels we covered, children's toys we covered, kosher goy we covered. SodaStream. Do I need to buy new plastic SodaStream bottles designated for Pesach? The suggestion is yes, preferable to get new SodaStream bottles, but if you clean it carefully and only produce SodaStream, pure seltzer, that which is kosher for Pesach, then you're good to go, but preferable to have new SodaStream bottles for Pesach. Similarly, by the way, in the kitchen, most children's formula has kitnios. So kitnios, we said, is not prohibited biblically, maybe not even rabbinically, yet we strongly observe it as a din, as a halacha. Children can drink kitnios from a baby bottle. If they need it, wash that baby bottle in a bathroom sink or the garage sink. Don't wash it in the kitchen. You don't want to have kitnios mixed with your other utensils and your other ingredients. Preferable to have new bottles for the baby for Pesach, even though they'll be kitnios, but the previous bottles may have had actual chametz in them. Better to have new baby bottles for Pesach to replace them. Okay, let's move over to ingredients for a moment. Kelim mikvah, refrigerator. Oh, medicines and cosmetics. Is an instant hot water dispenser the same as an urn? Now, the InstaHot I'm talking about that is part of your sink, attached to your sink. You can press a button or turn it and hot water comes out. You can use that and you can kosher it by pouring the boiling water. High chairs we talked about, and so on. Okay, medicines. Vacuum cleaner, you should empty the vacuum cleaner bag before Pesach, though what's in it is likely inedible and would not meet the standard, the criteria of chametz, but you should empty the vacuum cleaner bag before the time of owning chametz. What else did you say? I trust the assistant. Run the garbage disposal, empty the garbage, preferably before Pesach. Now, when I was young, like many of you, there was a general attitude that was not only a stringency, in some ways it was more than just a stringency, it's inaccurate, that we were careful about every soap and shampoo, and careful of every cream, and careful about everything that we encountered on Pesach. But we've become wise in our older age, and we've come to realize, and I share with you now, this is the consensus of the poskim of the CRC in Chicago. Not only the CRC, but the Dayan of Agura, Rav Shmuel First, Shlita, Rabbi Reis, Rabbi Schwartz, Rav David Zucker of the Chicago Community Kollel, all signed on to the following. This is accurate. This is what I personally follow. This is what I recommend. The following. Any variety of blush, body soap, conditioner, cream, eyeshadow, eyeliner, foundation, ink, lotions, mascara, nail polish, ointment, paint, shampoo, stick deodorant are permissible for Pesach. You remember we said the definition of chametz is, all together now, edible. If it's inedible, it's not chametz. I have not seen anybody eat blush, body soap, conditioner, cream, eyeshadow, eyeliner, foundation, ink, lotion, mascara, nail polish, ointment, paint, shampoo, stick, deodorant. They are inedible, and therefore there is no value in ensuring that they have no chametz in them. They are inedible, all of them. You don't have to check, you don't have to buy a book to look. They're all automatically kosher. Now, many varieties of cologne, liquid deodorants, hairspray, mousse, perfume, shaving lotion, sunscreen, and wipes have something called denatured alcohol. Why is denatured alcohol potentially a problem? Because denatured alcohol could be edible. There are alcoholics, Kitty Dukakis among them, who drink perfume, would drink a liquid deodorant because they were so driven by their addiction. It is edible. It can be consumed. So there are those who are strict for a product that contains denatured alcohol, and therefore one could consult the CRC as a list, the Star K as the most comprehensive list, for cologne, liquid deodorants, hairspray, mousse, perfume, and shaving lotion. Now, among the items that have potential denatured alcohol, among them is something that we're all using, something that is incredibly valuable today, and that is Purell. So our good friends at the CRC addressed the Purell question, and they said the following. Alcohol-based hand sanitizers such as Purell typically contain 62% ethyl alcohol, which may possibly be chametz. However, if Schwartz checked a sample of hand sanitizer and said it is inedible as other liquid soaps and may therefore be used on Pesach. So in other words, even though it may have that ingredient of alcohol, that's not enough to say that it is prohibited. It has to have the ingredient and it has to be an edible form of the ingredient. But Purell, even for the biggest alcoholic, is inedible, and therefore Purell is not a problem on Pesach. That is the Purell question. Okay, so that is cosmetics and toiletries and Purell. What about lipstick? The CRC has now a great searchable link. They're very proud of. They listed a searchable link for lipstick. And they give you a list. You start to list the ingredients of your lipsticks. Most of the lipsticks are good. If you have one that you use during the year, you can wipe off or cut off the end and continue to use one that is okay on Pesach itself. CRC holds that mouthwash and toothpaste can contain chametz, and therefore both of them produce lists. Again, I encourage you to consult the lists of the Star K, the CRC, the OU, for which toothpaste and mouthwash is good for Pesach. Okay? So that is cosmetics and toiletries. What about medicines? What about medicines? So Rav Moshe is of the opinion that a medicine, a pill that you swallow, which is prescribed for you, a medicine, is not a food. Food is consumed for a different purpose than a medicine. And therefore, all pill and non-chewable tablet medication with or without chametz, even if it has chametz, if it's a swallowed pill, is permissible. Vitamins and food supplements are different, because they are not medically indicated, they're volunteered. So if they have actual chametz in them, one should not consume them. Again, there are lists of which vitamins. You can email me offline or ask your local rabbi if you're not here in Boca, and I'm happy to help you, but you can look at the CRC, the OU, and the Star K to find out if they're eligible. Liquid and chewable medications could have chametz, and therefore it depends on your doctor indication and ask a shayla about it. But to be very, very, very clear, if you are in doubt, do not stop a medication that you need. If you have any doubt, do not stop a medication that you need. Okay, so just to go back, because we didn't talk about blenders and food processors, they're also intricate, detailed, complicated, and generally we say do not get koshered. So we do not kosher a blender, we do not kosher a food processor, we don't kosher those things.
The new attachment has never been used.
If you have attachment to them that was never used ever, never washed with chametz, yeah, and never used, and now you want to use it and incorporate it into Pesach, there's no reason that you would have to. Okay, so that is cosmetics, toiletries, and medication. Any questions about products? The CRC has a very handy shopping guide. Take it with you when you go shopping, or look on their app as you go shopping, and you can put in the questions as you go. Now here they have a difference between the CRC and the OU. CRC says all coffee needs to be kosher for Pesach, but the OU here saves the day, and the OU has a list of unflavored, not decaffeinated, so unflavored caffeinated ground or whole bean coffees. There's a long list of ones that may be okay. So there are some coffees that are caffeinated. If it's decaffeinated, it's a problem. There are caffeinated whole bean or even ground instant coffees which are okay. I direct you to the OU booklet on coffees. It has the best list when it comes to coffees. Okay, what are the other questions that may come up? Let's see where we're at. Vitamix. Can I use the base of the machine with a kosher? I'm not sure what Vitamix is.
It's a blender.
Vitamix is a blender. We don't use a blender. We don't kosher the blender. We have a separate Pesach blender. What foods need to be thrown out? So there are those who hold that we don't sell real chametz on Pesach. It's a custom some have, a stringency some have. Because the sale of chametz could look like a harama, a legal loophole that one is not sincere about, therefore there are those who do not sell real chametz. Even those who have the custom not to sell real chametz on Pesach, this year can be lenient. If they've been stocking up, given all that's going on, they can be lenient. Don't hesitate to buy what you need now, because you have to be stringent not to sell it. So even pasta, flour, cereal, you can sell it. As part of the process, as part of the legitimate sale of chametz. If you want to maintain that stringency, then maintain that stringency. Okay, what about other products? Somebody asked me about pine nuts. Pine nuts are permissible for Pesach, like walnuts, but nuts that have BHA or BHT require a hashgacha for Pesach. Those are complicated, long words. Butylated hydroxyanisole, however you pronounce that properly. I'm not a chemist. Often are applied to nuts, and they have a soybean oil base. It could be a problem, so you need to make sure they're not listed on the ingredient panel. And if they're not, walnuts, pine nuts would be eligible and okay. All bottled water is kosher for Pesach without certification. Even bottled water that contains minerals, as long as it's not flavored and as long as it doesn't have vitamins. Milk. If you're going to use non-kosher Pesach milk, meaning milk that's not labeled kosher for Pesach, buy the milk that you need in advance. There's reasons behind it, not for now. The hour is getting late. But all the milk that you anticipate needing for Pesach, buy before Pesach, where we'll still rely on Bittul. The milk and the eggs you'll need on Pesach, buy in advance. If you ran out of milk or you ran out of eggs, buy them from a local kosher store. There, under kosher supervision, you can rely on the fact that they are okay. But if possible, you can buy non-kosher Pesach, eggs and milk, before Pesach. What about alternatives to milk? If you're allergic to milk, can you use soy milk and almond milk? Many or most of them have kitnios in them. Some of them, they are kitnios proper, which are eligible for people who can't have milk but need. But many of them have chametz itself. So you need to consult the lists again. CRC, Star, KOU, all have wonderful lists that help you ascertain which milk alternatives you are eligible, milk substitutes you can get. Similarly, Boost, Ensure, there's kitnios in them. When they're indicated, you're allowed to rely on them to eat them, even though they're kitnios. Wash the utensil you use it with, not in the kitchen. And you need to ensure that it's on a list, because it could be that it has more than just kitnios. It could have chametz itself, which would be a problem. Aluminum pans, aluminum tinfoil are not a problem. They don't have to be kosher lePesach. They do not have to be kosher lePesach. However, wax paper also does not need to be kosher lePesach, but parchment paper does. Parchment paper does. So in terms of those items in the kitchen, they do not need to be kosher lePesach. Aluminum pans, tin foil, or wax paper, but parchment paper does.
Parchment paper has enough flour, it still needs it?
I believe so. Pans, aluminum are fine. Paper products are fine, including bags, napkins, plates, and wax paper can be used for hot or cold. Parchment paper needs Pesach certification to it. Okay. Other products which may come up. Quinoa is a discussion this year. The CRC still maintains quinoa is kosher lePesach and is not included in kitnios and is not included, obviously, in chametz itself. However, kitnios has been found to have small seeds packaged on the same equipment as other grains like wheat, barley, and oats. So therefore, you should only purchase quinoa, which is kosher lePesach. Quinoa is eligible, but only purchase quinoa, which has already been confirmed as kosher lePesach. Can you kosher a standard mixer like a KitchenAid? No, we don't kosher mixers. We assume they're too complicated, intricate, and small crevices and cracks. We don't kosher mixers. Quinoa we just covered. Cleaning your car for Pesach. Again, don't go crazy. You want to have a clean car, vacuum it. It's a good project for children during these days. Get them outdoors a little bit. But you don't have to go absolutely crazy, because remember, anything ineligible to a dog or anything under 30 grams ineligible to a human being is not chametz. So you're trying to confirm under the seats, under the carpet, on the side shelves, that there is no actual chametz, but you don't have to go crazy. If you are going away for Pesach in a way that's okay, and you're not going to be accessing your cars, just include them in your sale. You don't have to clean them at all, and you are good to go. Kashering knives with plastic handles, Haggala. We didn't even talk about Haggala. We'll come back to Haggala in a moment. Let's make sure we do Haggala. Dish soap does not need to be kosher lePesach. You're good to go. It's inedible. Invisalign aligner at the beginning of Pesach. What's Invisalign aligner?
You fix it. You put it in the
it's just something.
It's braces.
It goes in your mouth. I mean, clean it well, and then you're good to go. Your braces, your dentures, your Invisalign, Goldenberg Dentals. Everybody can get their Invisalign. Saying for a friend, and you're good to go. Faro kosher for Pesach. I don't know what that is. Perhaps you could elaborate. Paper plates, we just said. Quinoa, certified gluten-free is not enough, according to the CRC. It needs to actually be kosher lePesach, certified for Pesach, or on a list of an organization who say that it qualifies for being kosher lePesach. So let's do with the area we left off in terms of the kashering in the kitchen was our utensils. We in Boca host kashering at the Federation every year. I've not yet confirmed whether that's still going to be on or not, given our social distances and the precautions we're taking. We'll let you know if that's on or not. However, how do you kasher? You can kasher in either a kosher lePesach pot or non-kosher lePesach pot. It has to not be used for 24 hours. You fill it with water and allow the water to bubble up. Here's my favorite expression again, mala ababuos. It has to be filled and bubbling. And you insert utensils slowly. The utensils themselves should be clean and not have been used in 24 hours. Insert them slowly, remove them, run them under cold water is our custom right after. Insert the utensils in a way that preserves the ratio of the water as 60 to 1 against the utensils. So you don't want to drop everything in your kitchen into that pot of boiling water simultaneously. You want to stagger it as you put it in and take it out, both so the water can maintain that level of mala ababuos, of bubbling, and so that you don't ruin your ratio of 60 to 1 in terms of kashering. So you can kasher your kiddush cups in the little kiddush plate. If it was at the table while you were having chametz, they should be kashered. You can kasher your silverware in that way. You can kasher pots within a bigger pot in that way. If you have a big pot that can't fit into another pot, there's a way to kasher that also. It's complicated. You fill it with bubbling water. You heat a rock. You drop it inside so the water boils over the sides, and you've kashered that bigger pot as well. Farro is another grain. So let's look it up. Farro. I thought that was the guy who gave his problems in Egypt. Hold on. Are any of you laughing right now? I can't even see. Why isn't this working? I lost my keyboard. Yecheved, Farro. Can you check Farro? I never heard of it. Oh, one second. Let's look on the shopping list.
Here, I'll look up.
Fennel?
No, Farro. I'll look up.
Not on the CRC shopping list. I don't see it here. We'll come back to that in a moment. But the CRC does write amaranth, A-M-A-R-A-N-T-H, is similar to quinoa. Okay. A pot that has ringed and raised Teflon bottom, is that okay to kasher? Much more complicated. Teflon is a question. We don't kasher. Plastic Melta manual coffee filter. I'm not sure exactly what that case is. A Melta manual coffee filter. Plastic. We kasher hard plastic. It's cleaned carefully. No crack or crevice. You can immerse the plastic coffee filter into water. Baby high chair tables made of plastic should be wiped down very well with a caustic cleaner. And the tray should be covered very, very carefully. Okay. Pets. We haven't talked about pets yet. Anyone here have a pet? Do they have to be quarantined together with you? I don't know what the status of pets are. The story of pets is the following. We're not allowed to, we said, derive any benefit from chametz on Pesach. It's one of the five uniquenesses of chametz, Isser Hana'a. It's not unique. Basar b'chalav is also Basar b'hana'a. But chametz you're not allowed to benefit from. If you were to feed it to your pet, the pet is your responsibility, you are considered to be benefiting from chametz on Pesach. So the CRC has a wonderful list of which pet foods contain no chametz in them whatsoever. By the way, you can't feed your pet meat and milk either. If the ingredient label of a pet food has meat and milk, it's a problem because you can't get hana, you can't get benefit from basar b'chalav from meat and milk either. So you have to feed your pet one of these pet foods that meet the list. CRC has a great list. You can also check the Star K and the OU. I do not receive any payment from any of these three organizations, but we are all indebted to them for the fine work that they do. What if your animal's pet food, I get this every year, is not on any of their lists, and your animal, your pet, is a prima donna? It only eats that food. And if it changes its diet, it's going to have an upset stomach. So what do you do? If there is no alternative and no choice, you can sell your pet to a non-Jew. Now, you can't sell your pet to a non-Jew, but keep your pet in your home and feed your pet and have it be a legal loophole. A non-Jew has to actually take possession of your pet, and you cannot provide the non-Jew with the pet food. They have to go and take care of the pet food themselves. That will reflect that this is a bona fide, legitimate sale all the way. So ideally, find a kosher lePesach pet food alternative and feed it to your pet. If you can't, then you're going to have to sell your pet to a non-Jew for the duration of Pesach, and they will feed your pet for you their very sensitive diet that they have to eat. Okay, colonoscopy. contraceptives, dental tape, fever for a child. The CRC again goes through all of these questions. Good questions, well worthwhile going through. Any other questions coming up here? Garbage disposal, it's plastic handle that you hold when running the disposal. Is that hard plastic kasherable? So it is kasherable, run boiling water over it so you can continue to use it over Pesach. Backsplash in the kitchen need to be kashered. Excellent question, thank you, M. Yes, it does, because sometimes the pot is held up against the backsplash. So if you're kashering through Eroy, then you need to pour the water against the backsplash. If you're covering, then you should cover with a 90-degree angle so it goes up against the backsplash as well. Any other questions? Are there areas that we did not cover in our wonderful, joyful time together tonight? Pets, kashering. Yeah, anything hanging over the stovetop, if you have a hood, clean it very well. Clean it carefully and clean it well. You're not cooking, there's no fear it's going to embed taste into your food, but you don't want anything to fall down into your food from it, so clean it very well. Any other area that we did not cover? Last chance, last call in the chat. Induction, I still own answer. What does counters need to be covered with? Good question. You can't cover your counter with tin foil, that's too thin, and it's not going to be durable and reliable. You can cover it with thin laminate, thin wood. You could cover it with a hard roll of plastic that you can unroll. You can cover it. We had manufactured for us, to exact dimensions of our counters, a hard plastic that we cut in those shapes, we store it, and the part of the excitement and activity of getting ready for Pesach is clean the counters, leave them 24 hours, although that doesn't help in the case of covering, it's not necessary, and cover them with these exact fitted plastics that fit exactly there. If a freezer is clean, does it still need to be defrosted? Preferably, because what's clean at the surface, you don't know what's hiding underneath it. Ideally, it should be defrosted. Induction, I know I got to get back to you on induction. Family trip, we will be in touch. Electric urn that has only had water in it throughout the year. We said electric urn would be permissible if you never used it to fill any chametz like oatmeal. And microwave we spoke about earlier. Okay, so we're going to stop here. Feel free to ask me questions, your local rabbi questions. Again, I can't urge you strongly enough, and I've repeated this so much. CRC is a phenomenal resource. CRC, OU, Star K, please visit them. They'll answer most of your questions. If you took nothing else out of tonight, take a deep breath. You can do this. We're going to get through it. We're going to have an incredible Pesach. This is a crisis, but it's also an opportunity to be able to teach the joy and the happiness, the excitement of Pesach together. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Wishing everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. If you're looking for the recording, you'll find it shortly on yutorah.org and rabbiefremgoldberg.org. Mitzvah Hashem, everyone should be healthy and well, safe and secure, that our bias should have the sights, the smells, the flavors, the cleanliness and the purity of Pesach, a Chag Kasher V'Sameach filled with amazing simcha.